Now that winter is officially here, comes the challenge of how to entertain your kids once cabin fever sets in. You know what I'm talking about. If you're not satisfied with the prospect of unending video games, tweeting, and texting, how about some cool do-it-yourself projects you can share with your kids? And if you've got baking powder, cornstarch, a magnet, a few paper clips, you've got the essentials. You've got the makings of a snowy day experiment. No fancy chemistry sets necessary. So for the rest of the hour, we're sharing our favorite at-home experiments to do with the kids. If you or your kids have a favorite experiment, tell us about it. 844-724-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry. Let me introduce our guests who are going to help us along these snow day science ideas. And I have two veteran at-home experimenters. Lynn Brunell is an Emmy Award-winning TV writer for Bill Nye, the Science Guy. No wonder she knows all this good stuff. She's author of the new book, Mama Gone Geek, Calling on My Inner Science Nerd to Navigate the Ups and Downs of Parenthood. She joins us from Portland, Oregon. Good to talk to you again, Lynn.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Mike Adamick is a writer and stay-at-home dad. His latest book is Dad's Book of Awesome Science Experiments, and he joins us from San Francisco. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks so much. I'm excited to be here.
Nice to have you. Lynn, you've always said that you've always been a geek. When did you realize you could use that geekiness in your parenting?
I embrace my geekiness. It's true. I think I realized it when we realized that as you're going through the day, the more you get your kids to wonder about things, the more you get them sort of amazed by the things in the world. That's really the basis of science, because you're observing, you're experimenting, you're failing, you're laughing, you're figuring it out. And that is really what science is about. So it kind of became this kind of interesting old friend for me to lean on when you come into contact with some of the trickier things of parenting.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And of course, it comes in handy, right? When being a geeky person, and when kids ask you those questions, they're going to ask you, like, where do babies come from? Right? How do they
make? Yeah, I get those. Yeah. And you get those. I get those in the car, and you're driving. You're like, oh, my God, this is now? We're doing this now? But, you know, when I get that question from my oldest, he's like, okay, where do they come from? I'm like, hey, you know what? I jumped right to DNA. I was like, it's cool. Like, half of the deck comes from mom, and half of the deck comes from dad, and you shuffle them, and blah, blah, blah. And I was feeling so smug and feeling so proud of my geeky answer to this. And he's like, yeah, but. Really?
Yeah. Always the next question, right?
Yeah.
Mike, how did you get started experimenting with your daughter?
The same thing, the endless questions. Wait a minute, how do mom and dad shuffle again? It's just the questions are endless. And, you know, I have a daughter. She's 8 now, and I've been staying home with her for the last 8 years. And our science experiments are just kitchen sink science experiments that really come from the questions that develop throughout the day, mm-hmm. whether at home or on a walk. And us just really wanting to explore the world around us, you know, what's going on with, you know, why is the sky blue? You know, where do meteors come from? That type of thing. So, yeah, just lots of inquiry that we try to answer as best we can.
Well, let me ask both of you then about, for parents who are not as geek-oriented, geek-enabled as you are, I mean, what is the biggest problem, the biggest mistake that parents make when these kids ask you these questions?
For me, I think the biggest mistake is thinking that you have to be a science geek in order to answer these questions, because honestly, we're all stumbling through. We're all trying to figure it out ourselves. So I think the greatest gift you can give to your kids is saying, gosh, I don't know. Let's figure it out. Let's look it up. I mean, you don't come born with the answers. You come born, hopefully, with a curiosity to figure out what those answers are.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
That's just such a great answer. And also the freedom to make mistakes. I think so often we can get on Pinterest or Martha Stewart and everything looks so perfect, and people might be hesitant to try that really neat experiment because it's not going to come off in this social media sharing beautifulness of it. It's going to be a big blob on your kitchen counter. You know, kids don't care. They just want to get their hands dirty and they want to have fun and they want to answer their questions. So, you know, get in there, give yourself the freedom to make mistakes, because this is science. If you're not making mistakes, you're doing something wrong.
Should you have should you have a place at home, one place where you do your experiments, or you know, like, this is our lab, this is where we're going to do something?
We do it everywhere, and we're all about the blobs. I mean, you don't want to do it on the living room floor, but, you know, on the kitchen counter, out on the backyard, and, you know, wherever you can find a space for it, I'd say do it.
And do you collect, like, a base amount of homey stuff, like I mentioned before, the paperclip, the other kinds of stuff, cornstarch, the magnet? Should you just keep that in stock all the time in case an experiment breaks out?
Well, I get in trouble from my husband all the time. He's like, what is this? I'm like, oh, no, we need that because we're going to make borax snowflakes. You know, we need. And so he's always trying to weed through. And I'm like, no, you got to save that. So I haven't quite found the organization yet that works best for the harmony in our family. But, yeah, I keep everything.
All right. We're going to come back and talk lots more with Lynn Brunell and Mike Adamick about these home things that you'd like to do. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking today about at-home experiments that you can all do, easy stuff that you can do. We're sharing favorite at-home experiments. Do you have one? Maybe you can share it with us. You ever make a GAC or a leaf blower hovercraft? Give us a call, 844-724-8255. We're talking with Lynn Brunell, author of the book Mama Gone Geek, Calling on My Inner Science Nerd to Navigate the Ups and Downs of Parenthood. Mike Adamick, author of Dad's Book of Awesome Science Experiments. Dad's book, yeah. Did Mom write one? We'll find out. Our number, 844-724-8255. We have tweets coming in already with some really interesting suggestions for simple at-home stuff. Tony Nolan writes, with a black Sharpie, draw a line, a thick line in a coffee filter, dip one end in water to get chromatography. Yeah, chromatography separation of dyes. That's kind of cool. 20 Fleeken says, frost on the side of a tin can. You have water plus crushed ice plus salt if you want to do that. And some people are, Michelle Booz writes, extract DNA from fruits like strawberries and bananas. So easy, and with household ingredients, kids love it. Let's see what else kids love. Mike, have you got an experiment, something? Let's swap experiments. What about this straw rocket blaster you talk about?
The straw rocket blaster is just one of my favorite go-to experiments. It's stuff you've probably already got in your junk drawer or your art bin, and it really allows you to, if you want to, if you're, you know, you start asking lots of questions, you can really dig into Newton's third law of motion, you know, the equal and opposite reaction. What you do is you take a string, some tape, a drinking straw, a balloon, and some twine, and you're going to take one end of the twine and you're going to wrap it on, let's say, the top of a bookshelf. And then you're going to run the other end of the twine through your straw and then tape the straw to your balloon, blow up the balloon, and then tape the straw to it, and you can let it go. And as the air goes out of the balloon is going to go forward. And kids just love this. There's so many variables you can do. You can tie the string, you know, up a staircase to make it go higher. You can tie it to a tree limb outside. You can try to tape weights to the balloon to make your rocket carry a payload. It's just really a fascinating thing. You can set up two of them and have a race. And it's just a great way to have fun doing science. And I really like to kind of wait for the teachable moment. You don't want to really, you know, stop everything and say, well, okay, now we're going to talk about Newton. But the questions are going to pop up, and you're going to have the information to answer it.
Mm. And there's no dousing water anywhere on the furniture. Lynn, here's one you did during a power outage. You made a lemon-powered clock.
Yeah, we had a 7-day power outage, so I had a lot of experiments to do. But at one point, I was, we had lemons, and if you take pennies and nails, the nails have to be galvanized because that means that they're covered with zinc, and the pennies have to be before 1982 because they were copper before 1982 and not so much after 1982. Mm-hmm. And you wrap copper wire around, so if you wrap copper wire around your penny and you wrap copper wire around your nail, and then you stick them in two sides of a juicy lemon, you're going to create an electron flow because two things happen. When you stick the nail into the lemon juice, the zinc molecules, the zinc atoms come off. And within the zinc atoms, then the negative charges are drawn toward the copper on the other side of the lemon. So they kind of flow over to that. And then they flow out through the copper wire. If you attach the copper wire to like an LED light or a small you know, those little clocks can work too, those little small digital clocks. If you can get enough flow of electrons to actually power these things, and it's cool. But let me tell you, after 7 days with the kids, we woke up one morning and they had wired up every fruit and vegetable in the house, and they were trying to hook up to the TV because they wanted to watch SpongeBob.
Well, if you get a dozen lemons, can you hook them in series and really get a
You can. Yeah, in fact, that's what you want to do is you want to hook them as many as possible. Yeah.
Don't get me started. Let's go to the phones to Susan in let's go to Thomas in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi there.
You know, I have a 9-year-old son, and for supervised science fun, nothing beats dry ice.
Supervised science fun.
I had the supervised, but that we can burn away hours of the rainy afternoon playing with dry ice.
And where do you get the dry ice from?
It's readily available at most grocery stores. I think you have to be 18 years old to purchase it.
Mm-hmm. And when you say what kind of things do you do? Give me the top five things that you do with your dry ice.
Well, I think maybe an early favorite is to break off a small chunk, and while you're wearing garden gloves, press some to a quarter. I actually, you challenge them, say, "Hey, I bet I can. You think I can make George Washington scream?" And as it sublimates, it vibrates a quarter, a very high pitched sound.
Oh, is that right?
So that's a good little entry experiment.
That's great.
You know, the common one, and one you can do kind of many iterations of, is dry ice dropped in a little beaker, a glass of water. You can add, of course, dyes to that, or soap for bubbles.
Right. That's what you always see, the spooky broth that they have on television in the movies.
That's right.
Dry
that's
ice
right.
and water, right?
You know, if you can get a hold of film canisters, there's so much you can do with film canisters and dry ice. You put a little piece in there with some water, and it'll eventually pop off the top. And then another favorite is to drill opposing little diagonal holes in a film canister and suspend it from a string, and put dry ice and water in there, and it'll spin it around very quickly.
Of course, if your kids are young, if your kids are young, you have to tell them what a film canister was once used for.
Right, it's educational on many levels.
That's great. Thanks for calling. Good luck with those home stuff.
All right, have
a happy New Year, Lynn. Any more dry ice suggestions?
You know, there's one really cool thing to do. If you get it in a, I use a Pyrex bowl, and you put warm water in and dishwashing liquid. Dawn works really well for some reason. And then you dip you get a little cloth, so you dip it and get it wet. Throw in the, you wet the rim of the bowl, toss in your dry ice, and then take your wet cloth, your wet soapy cloth, and kind of scrape it across the whole thing so that you create a film. And then you get this really cool, like, fortune teller's bubble that just kind of blows up and fills with smoke. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Mike, of course, there's the old standby, which everybody started with, which was the baking soda and vinegar. Call it what you will, volcano, fire extinguisher, or anything like that.
Right. The Brady Bunch, I think, really popularized that one in pop culture when was it Peter created one that, you know, exploded all over Jan and Marsh's friends. It became a big hit. What we like to do something slightly different. People will put the baking soda in first and then pour vinegar on it, and you got to do it kind of quickly because it's going to have, the gas is going to form really quickly, and boom, there's your little explosion. What I like to do is first pour vinegar into, let's say, a tall glass or, you know, whatever you want to double as your volcano, and then wrap baking soda in toilet paper and then put a string around it, and then you can drop it into the beaker, and you've got a little extra time before the vinegar is actually going to eat away the toilet paper and then get the baking soda wet. So it's kind of like a timed explosion of your volcano.
Yeah, we used to do that with a fire extinguisher experiment. You get a beaker, you put vinegar at the bottom, you hang the toilet paper with the baking soda in it, and then you put a cork on with whatever pipe you like to put on the outside, and when you turn it upside down, right, it mixes together and it all comes squirting out. And in fact, that's how the old soda acid fire extinguishers used to work, didn't they? Basically, the same principle.
Yeah. And you can take that even further just by talking about the gas. I mean, the explosion's always fun, but what's also interesting to me is the mysterious gas that disappears, right? Mm-hmm. And it's carbon dioxide that's being produced. If you take your beaker, your glass, after the explosion, and you can pour the gas over a candle, just the gas, just tip it a little bit, and it'll extinguish your flame. And that's kind of fun to see.
Wow. That's cool. as we used to say. Yeah. Let's go to the phones to Susan in Bristol, Virginia. Hi, Susan. Oh, did we lose her? Let's go to where am I? Hannah in Rochester, Michigan. Hi, Hannah.
Hi there. I'm actually not a parent. I'm about to be a teacher, though, and I'm so glad I'm listening to this. It's giving me great ideas. But the one I was thinking about was, I've done with some kids I babysat before, was Metamucil and water, and you microwave it, and it turns into this, if you get like the orange flavor kind, it turns into this orange slime, and the longer you microwave it, kind of bouncier and more absorbed the water becomes, and it's really interesting and kind of quick if you have younger kids. Just two ingredients, and it works really. It's really fun. It looks like something you'd buy.
Wow, I can't wait to go home and try that.
It's like Halloween slime or something like that.
It sounds really gross, but it works really, really well. I was really surprised.
Yeah, I'm going to go home and try that. Thanks.
I am too.
Thanks for suggesting that. Lynn, you have an interesting, very simple way to preserve snowflakes.
Yes. Well, you know, there's a couple things, right? Some things you need a little bit more equipment, some things you don't, right? If it's snowing out, take a piece of black construction paper out and look at the snowflakes with a magnifying glass. That's amazing. You can do that with black velvet, too, and it'll hold the crystals. But if you have a little microscope slide, you can bring it outside, keep it undercover, and then spray it with hairspray. And then walk out into the snow, catch a flake. You can use toothpicks and move it around the slide if you want, and then bring it back under and let it sit. Let it sit under, under a protective place or in a cold garage, and you will be able to preserve the shadow of that snowflake forever, because it'll make an impression in the hairspray, and as the hairspray dries and as the water will eventually evaporate, you'll get this cool sort of echo of a snowflake. It's really fun.
Wow. And we actually have your instructions for preserving snowflakes up on our website at sciencefriday.com/homescience. It'll stay for indefinitely, that little impression of the snowflake?
Yeah, you can cover it with another microscope slide, and it's not going to go anywhere.
And when you look under the microscope, you see the real crystal structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That is cool. I heard about this as a kid. I never tried it. Always wanted to. Maybe now that I'm a big kid, I can actually do it, because I'm not making a mess in anyone else's house. How about frozen bubbles?
Frozen bubbles are awesome. I discovered this by accident. I went to school in Maine, and it was freezing, and I went out on the fire escape with a thing of bubbles, and I blew them, and they held, and then they didn't freeze, they bounced, and you can actually hear them clink on the ground. But I guess you're getting it so thin, right? So you're getting a several molecule thin layer of water, and it freezes instantly in the cold. Ping, 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 ping. Wow. It's really fun.
Wow. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Lynn Brunel and Mike Adamick. Mike, let's talk about, I find fascinating. I want to do this next time it rains. This is to go micrometeorite hunting in your rain gutters?
This is another one that gets you outside. I think a lot of people think, oh, it's raining or it's snowing. I got to stay inside. But I think like with the frozen snowflakes, it's fun to get out and explore the world. It looks different to kids than it's looks on a regular sunny day. And this is something that you can do, and you can scale it up depending on the age of your kid and really turn it into like a big classification system, or head down to your local science center and try to verify that, yes, indeed, I found a meteorite. Well, what this is about is that all those shooting stars that you see, and in fact there's a big show tomorrow night, or the night of the 3rd going into the 4th, aren't really stars, of course. They're meteors, rock and dust particles entering our atmosphere and burning up, and we get to see a really cool light show. Well, most burn up and never reach Earth, and some actually do make it down to Earth. And I think it was Cornell University came out with numbers that it's something like 37,000 to 80 or so thousand tons of meteorites, go through the atmosphere, and not all of them are going to, hit the ground, but some of them do, like tens of thousands of little ones do. and you can find them with a really powerful magnet. Let's say it rains and all the rain sloshes water off of your roof down into your gutters. Well, you can put a bucket with a magnet right where the gutter spout is, and all the water is going to go in, and any little droplets that pour off the roof down the gutter and into the spout are going to go into the bucket, and the magnet is going to get attract these little micrometeorites that you'll have to sort through, you know, when you drain your bucket, drain it through a sieve and put it on some paper and grab some toothpicks, because they're going to be really tiny, and you're going to want to try to take the little particles that are magnetic and separate those to one side versus rocks and leaves and whatever else you have. And it's really helpful to have a microscope for these, because they're going to be really small. And we always have to go online. There's a couple of really great websites that help you classify these little micrometeorites. One is called Project Stardust. And some meteorites, they're going to be magnetic. They're iron, stony, or stony iron, so they're going to stick to your magnet. So those are the ones you're really going to want to focus with on your microscope. And some are going to look like really neat metal marbles. And some are going to look like jagged little asteroids, like you might see in a Hollywood movie, but scaled down, obviously, to microscopic levels. And it's just really neat to pick through and try to find these little micrometeorites and realize, you know, all the questions come up, the Earth is going to go through.
And you can find them. You can really find them. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat. And then, you've got these little collection of micrometeorites.
Wow. Lynn, that's so cool. It is cool. It's cool. You have to get a very strong magnet. I guess you can buy that online, too.
Yeah, you can.
Before we have about a minute to go, Lynn, but I can't let you go without telling us about your experiment with a magnet. An unusual, your experience, I should say, with it.
My experience, yeah. The day before school, Kai was 5 years old. The day before school started, we had a little party, and he was playing with his friends, and I heard this blood-curdling scream, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's fallen off the bunk bed. No, it turned out they were playing kitty, and he had swallowed a magnet, kitty food magnet. And so we rushed to the hospital, and in an effort to after I finished freaking out, I was trying to calm him down in the back seat. And I said, this could be kind of cool. And he wasn't buying that. And I said, no, it could be really interesting because, they're going to probably take an X-ray, and you can see what the inside of your body looks like. And in fact, they did take an X-ray. And luckily, it was only one magnet. And he said, that's fine. The doctor said, he gave me a little plastic dish and a handful of little popsicle stick tongue depressors, and he said, you're going to have to sift through what comes out of him until you find the magnet. And I thought, that is not going to be great. But it dawned on me that if you use a compass, the compass needle might be able to point to where this magnet was. And in fact, that's what we did. And thank God, because it took like close to 27 days for this magnet to make its way
and
through.
And you traced it by the compass all through his little body until it finally
came out. And then
we
talked about intestines. And it was really fun. And then, when the needle didn't move, we thought, okay, culprit's gone.
Wow. What a story. I can't top that, so we're going to end the show. Well, thank you. Lynn Brunell's an Emmy Award-winning TV writer for Bill Nye, the Science Guy, author of the new book, Mama Gone Geek, Calling on My Inner Science Nerd to Navigate the Ups and Downs of Parenthood. Mike Adamick is a writer and a stay-at-home dad, and his latest book is Dad's Book of Awesome Science Experiments. Thank you all for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We've got all kinds of stuff on our website, dozens of experiments you can find all year round at sciencefriday.com. Create a creature that walks on water, make chocolate crystals. We have all the secrets and all more stuff at sciencefriday.com/homescience.